Welcome to the Social Impactors Podcast. This podcast is all about impact. We work to highlight impactful individuals making positive social change in their communities. From coaches, authors, entrepreneurs, influencers, we tap into the minds of some of the most impactful people around the world to find out how they have built a life of creating impact. Now listen in and be ready to go on a journey of enlightenment, motivation, and awe. Social impact everywhere.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Social Impactors Podcast, a podcast where we highlight people making positive social change in their communities. And today we have Yosef. And Yosef, thank you so much for being on the show. I love that we talked about it before, and I'm super excited to hear that story because you didn't tell me enough, but I know the listeners will get it. So I'd love for you just, you know, introduce yourself as a social impactor, and what that really is who you are, what you do, and why you believe in it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's, first of all, this is so cool, and I'm like over the moon stoked about the fact that these podcasts are just, I don't know what it is, like you guys are just crushing my feed. You guys are killing it with the attention economy. So like for me, hats off, man. Really, really awesome. So thank you for bringing me in. You know, it's interesting, right? You talk about social responsibility. You talk about, you know, social impact. My story and how I ended up being, you know, where I am today, it does, for all intents and purposes, if you had to script this narrative from scratch, you couldn't come up with a more disparate narrative if you tried. It's almost like, for all intents and purposes, it doesn't make sense. I grew up in an Orthodox Jewish family, great people, really, really warm, very communal, very insular. You know, the objective behind that was really kind of double down on the life lessons, on the traditions, on the culture, on the faith, and really kind of move up a trajectory that allowed for that type of growth. You know, for all intents and purposes, there was a very, very foreseeable future for me in the rabbinate to be a rabbi of a synagogue and lead people and walk down that path. I did it. It's not like my claim to fame, but you know, what I realized in doing that was there has to be something more than just sharing of data. It has to be more than just kind of this visceral and ethereal engagement at that level. For me, it just, for a while, it just didn't seem like it was organically where I wanted to be with myself and, you know, where I felt aligned with my self-awareness. So, you know, growing up in the family that I grew up with, you kind of had, my dad was a real, real self-made guy, an immigrant, came to this country like everybody else, you know, everybody else has an immigrant story. Came to this country, probably very little amount of money, came into this country looking for a meaningful difference in his life, meaningful change, and like you said, impact, you know, for himself to grow his own, you know, his own experiences and his own way forward. My dad, the one thing about him was that he was exceptionally, exceptionally driven. Wouldn't take no for an answer because everything was on the line. So when you think about what that is, it's literally representative of all the things that, you know, entrepreneurs today are striving to attain, right? So this was something that was ingrained from his upbringing, and he kind of brought it into the discussion to really just drive that type of growth. So he came here, created some self-made life for himself, met my mom, they got married, you know, had me, and there I was. I grew up in a family that was really, really very manual labor centric. They weren't a big proponents of education. You know, my dad really kind of grew by way of life lessons. So it wasn't really consistent with, you know, education wasn't on the forefront. And, you know, I felt like I could do more. And I doubled down on myself, which, by the way, is always a phenomenal investment. So, you know, and what I decided to do was I decided I really wanted to make this work. So I ended up going through school, C student, D student, not setting the world on fire. But, you know, I had an unrelenting belief in my potential. And, you know, if guys like Tom Bilyeu or Gary or God, there's so many of them. Simon Sinek, Tim Ferriss, you know, all the guys that are catching marquee and, you know, crushing it in the social game. If they've taught us anything, it's that if you don't believe in it, you have to have an unrelenting commitment to your own ability to do something. You know, because if you don't, who the hell will?
Yeah.
So, and I did that, and I worked my schnitzel off, and I worked hard, and I went through law school. I came out of law school. I went to work for a consulting firm. You know, it was weird, given my insular upbringing, and then kind of teaching myself all the pragmatics of business, and then kind of applying those pragmatics into an actual application. There's no handbook for that. So, you know, kind of learning school of hard knocks, that probably would have been like easier. But I had amazing mentors. I had great people that really took me under their wings, saw past the optics, doubled down on the potential, and really helped me grow. My first company was Arthur Anderson. You know, I was with them for quite a while. I really got my bones there. They ultimately closed up shop. You know, me and like 200 other people from my firm ended up moving over to what's now, well, now it's dissolved, but it was Bearing Point. And it was like a larger consulting firm. It still has a global kind of footprint, but in the US, it's dissolved. They filed Chapter 11. And, you know, part of that was really, you know, moving up the proverbial hierarchy and trying to make a name for yourself. I did that. And it's interesting, right? So this migration into speaking, this migration into what I'm doing now, I think really had its roots there. Because it was a situation where I was responsible for a practice that handled regulatory risk and advisory. So in English, what that means is companies, banks, financial institutions that are facing a rate of change in the business environment today, that there's no viable way that the business environment can keep pace with the regulatory change that's happening. It's just happening too fast. You know, it feels like I'm Avery, I have this amazing business, I have a policy that's working for me Monday, by Thursday your policy is completely superfluous. Like, you have to ask yourself, like, how do I pivot? So when I was coming up, that was something that I doubled down on, and I kind of introspected, and I said, you know what, the only thing that's consistent is this rate of change. The market is moving faster than people can keep pace with. How do I double down on that? How do I get ahead of that? How do I create my own differentiator, my own accelerator to be meaningful? So I started really, really getting into the predictive side of it, really getting into the cognitive side of it, looking at why decisions were being made. How do I reverse engineer that mindset to calibrate it to being proactive versus reactive? And it ended up being a major, major differentiator for me. It afforded me an opportunity to get in front of really great industry leaders, industry networking events, seminars. Again, this is pre-podcast, pre-vlogs, all these things. So if I wanted to share something with somebody, there was no Zoom. This was get on a plane, get off a plane, have jet lag, feel uncomfortable, wipe the crusties and get at it kind of thing.
Yeah.
And one of the key talks for me that I did, one of the more meaningful ones, was at the Pentagon. I gotta tell you, if you think you know scary, brother, you don't know scary. These are some of the most formidable people that literally don't get the recognition they're worth. So just a quick shout out to people that are committed to public service, committed to our government, committed to our military. Your investment and your sacrifice is not overlooked by me or by anybody in my circle. But one of the key things that I experienced over there was, it was this movement away from, this is my counterpart, this is my peer. It was very familial. And they say that there's no atheist in a foxhole, but these guys, it wasn't the faith element. It was the faith in each other. They genuinely had each other's back. And what one person learned, they found as fluid to be able to share one with another. And so on the back end of this talk, what ended up happening was I got approached by, it's almost like scripted narrative. Two guys in dark suits, they had these funky, coily, wiggly things coming out of their ears. I swear to God, I thought I breached a corporate veil. I'm like scared to death thinking that somebody's going to throw me in Gitmo for something I just said. They come out, you have no idea. Mind you, keep in mind, like, I'm a guy who works in private sector speaking in front of a public sector crowd. And excuse me, sir, can we have a minute of your time? Oh my God. I mean, like, what the hell is about to happen? I have no idea. And they came to me and they said, one of our senior leaders would like to have a word. I said, okay, all right. You know, should I call my lawyer? So I'm like, yeah. So they bring me into the E division of the Pentagon, and I come into this office. It was an office, right? Nothing fancy, nothing crazy, but where it was and how this was happening, it was like a scene from Trainspotting, right? You're standing at the front door and everything just moved 900 miles down the way.
Yeah.
There's a gentleman sitting in a chair, and he turns around in his chair, and it was the then Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates. Now, from a stature perspective, he's a considerably short guy. From a formidability perspective, he's a giant.
Yeah.
And it was kind of like this dichotomy of feelings that I was having, because I don't know if I look down kind of thing, or do I look over? It was very weird. But he basically said to me, he's like, you know, you touched upon some critical points in your talk. The points you made were resonant with my team, and we'd like to explore the potential possibility of an external consult on the work that you're doing in strategy with financial intelligence, financial crimes, and economic crimes. And we'd like to incorporate your consult as needed with our team. Is that something that you'd be amenable to? I said, you know, let me revert back to my superiors. I don't anticipate it's a problem, because the whole idea behind the industry networking was to create, you know, emphasis in the attention economy. It was about increasing awareness of what we did, how we did it, why we did it, and what the ROI was. So to get this kind of exposure, I can only imagine made sense. You know, the one caveat that I got back was, yeah, this is great news. You should do it. It's going to be really, really something meaningful. However, as long as it doesn't take away from your, you know, conventional responsibilities, we want to keep our eyes focused on our business as usual. But this is a really great opportunity. You should pursue it. Yeah. Two and a half weeks later, I get an email from a .mil address. We have you slated to participate with the SecDef. SECDEF, the SecDef, on a 17-week tour of theaters of operation to assess current state liabilities and vulnerability assessments and so forth and so on. And I'm like, what? I look at the itinerary, just for purposes of the call or for the podcast, I look at the itinerary. I'm like, I wouldn't go to these places if, like, you know, if the world was collapsing. Like, here I am on a plane having to participate. It was surreal. It was like bananas. So I ended up getting approached by my boss, to saying, hey, look, this is the situation. You know, they're now calling for a much more deeper investment of your time and energy into their initiatives. Let's figure that out. I guess based on my upbringing, I kind of look at things differently than other people, in the sense that everything has a divine plan. You know, wherever you stand on the religious spectrum, everything's governed by something bigger than you, kind of thing. And I'm a big believer of that. So during this same period of time, Bearing Point announced that it was filing Chapter 11 bankruptcy, and that the future state of everyone who worked for the organization was uncertain. I'm like, okay. I came back to the DOD and I said, look, this opportunity, you know, is occupying a significant amount of my time. Can we discuss kind of migrating into a more permanent role? They conducted their background assessment. They conducted their reviews and so forth and so on. And ultimately, we agreed to go forward with that. And I ended up undergoing a myriad of crazy background checks. You know, what kind of coffee do you drink in the morning? How many different types of sugar do you put in? And, you know, why do you use coffee from this company? Like, you name it. Now, obviously, I'm taking it, you know, somewhere else. But the idea was, it was really, really, really in depth. And that in and of itself, compounded with how this all happened, was just freaking me right the hell out. So here I am kind of making this transition into public service. I ended up really, really finding emotional growth, professional growth, and humility in this experience. Mm. And it literally changed the paradigm of how I perceive people, how I perceive cultures, how I perceive approaches, how I perceive strategy, and how I perceive what value means. You know, success is different for everybody. Like, you know, Gary says it, everybody says it, you know. This notion that success is predicated on how much money you make, that's nonsense. Mm. It's silliness, and don't get me wrong. I'm a big believer in Naveen Jain's philosophy. You should have a profitable business. You should really, you know, if you want to impact change on a large scale, you got to be able to fund it.
Yeah.
You need to have a profitable business.
Mm.
If you want to impact change on a small scale, start a nonprofit. You know what I'm saying? It kind of thing. But I get it. But what I came to appreciate was that success in this environment was governed by value add, what your contribution was to a larger team. And I came to appreciate that mindset, and it's led me, it's done me well.
Hmm.
So Robert Gates soon after retires. His successor is a gentleman named Leon Panetta. Leon Panetta is by far the most strategic boss I've ever had. I have never met anybody who could break down a strategy faster and better and quicker than this man. He was able to calibrate the problem, the ideal state, what we call the solution, and everything in between on how to get there with a simple, like, I don't want to say platform, but with a simple philosophy.
Hmm.
And that philosophy has literally guided my success in doing what I do. And it's been insane. So I ended up working for Leon. Amazing. He ultimately ended up leaving, and his successor was going to be somebody that was going to be bringing in their own team. So this opportunity was going to cease to exist.
Hmm.
Through those relationships, I was introduced to some amazing people at Chase, Jamie Dimon being one of them.
Mm.
And through that introduction, I was offered a job to come work at Chase. You know, I had this great recommendation from the Secretary of Defense. So I guess it looked good. It gave me the job. I had an amazing experience there. And, you know, and I loved it.
Mm.
But by the time I was 38, though, something happened and it recalibrated my life. So I was in London at a client meeting in Canary Wharf. And I was sitting there with a great colleague who looked at me and told me, he says, "Yosef, I got to say something." I said, "Okay." He says, "Your face looks a little flush. Are you feeling okay?" I said, "Well, I'll tell you the truth, I'm a little lightheaded." The next thing I know, I woke up a day and a half later in a hospital with an IV, lying in bed, and this guy, my colleague, there with me. I said, "Hey, what the hell am I doing here?" He says, "You don't know what happened." I said, "No." He says, "You had a heart attack."
Hmm.
I said, "What do you mean?" He says, "What do you mean?" I said, "Dude, I'm 38 years old. Like, what are you talking about?" He said, "You had a heart attack in front of a client. And, you know, you ended up here." The next words that came out of my mouth were my proverbial reboot. I said, "Did we lose faith in the customer?" And he says, "You're not hearing me. You just had a heart attack. And the first thing you're asking me is about whether or not we saved the relationship with the customer."
Hmm.
Like, are your priorities completely skewed? Like, what's wrong with you? And it was in that moment that I realized, you know, I have never, ever seen a hearse with a U-Haul trailer attached to it, ever. And what I came to appreciate was that I will work hard and I will provide meaning to customers, to clients, to people, and so forth, well, what am I leaving behind, right? Mm-hmm. And I raise this issue in my talks all the time, right? You talk about it. You talk about social impact. You talk about meaning. You talk about legacy. You talk about creating, you know, creating something that resonates with people. Like Chris was on this podcast before me, mm-hmm. and he was talking about, look, the impact that you genuinely have is whatever people are taking after you're gone, mm-hmm. you know, and that's really what it is, right? So that's, you know, I'll give you a contextual example. Today, I ask a lot of people who, when I do tech talks, you know, and tech summits and, you know, just business speeches and, you know, as a speaker, you're exposed to a whole myriad of different types of people. But when you get a chance to speak in front of these people and you ask them, you're like, today, who's the face of Apple? 9 out of 10 people would say?
Probably Steve Jobs still, yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it makes sense, right? Why? Man's been no longer with us, hasn't had his finger on the pulse of the company for years. Yeah. How is it that a man who's passed away so long ago can fundamentally and single-handedly still be the face of a company that A, doesn't bear his name, B, hasn't been involved with in years, or C, you know, probably hasn't provided input into anything meaningful, so to speak, within the context of what they do or why they do it in years? The answer is because it's a legacy. He set the tone for what best looks like. He set the tone for creating impact. People don't see companies like Apple for what they do. They look at them for why they do it, right? Simon talks about this all the time. Simon Sinek talks about, you know, you start with why, you double down on, you know, people don't buy what you do for, you know, they buy why you do it. And that's really that mindset, right? So I had to now recalibrate how I looked at people and looked at meaningful contribution. And I said, you know what? I want to double down on why I'm doing this. And I genuinely believe that the social impact, the social meaning for me was people work hard. Mm. This is a tough economy. You know, people are working hard. You got guys getting up, women getting up. Women are crushing it today. You know, you have guys that are crushing it today that are getting up at 3-4 in the morning, traveling for long distances at a time, don't see their wife, their kids, their family, you know, working, doubling down. Entrepreneurs, good entrepreneurs, guys that are really hitting the ball out of the park, but 19, 20-hour days. That's where we're at today, right? So what I came to realize is, with that in mind, people work hard to put trust in a business. Mm-hmm. When you violate that trust, when you lose that trust, that's unquantifiable damage.
Yeah.
You can't put money to it. Avery Konda has this amazing business. The minute there's an incident that I don't trust you anymore, mm-hmm. it's gone. How do you quantify that? It's not a revenue loss. That's a piece of it. That's a byproduct. That's the outcome. But the trust that you worked 20 years to gain, you lost in 5 minutes. I needed to be part of rebuilding and reaffirming that type of trust in my clients. So I focus on risk. I focus on compliance. I focus on, you know, business continuity, optimization. I look at how a business conducts itself, everything. People, process, product, technology. Is this making sense? Is it, you know, is it the issue of the day? Are you addressing the concerns that are impacting your clients? Are you putting processes into place that give you optimal execution today, but also optimal execution for your clients? Because at the end of the day, it's about the customer experience. So when you can have your business model aligned to that end game, and reverse engineer and work from right to left versus left to right, that's, you've won. That's it, right? You know, I look at companies like, you know, I look at Chase. Arguably, whether or not you're views on their company or your views on their CEO are what they are, the man has been in place for quite a long time. Mm. You don't maintain a job like that. Even after all the trials and tribulations that you undergo, you don't maintain a job like that. No, pardon me, there's a, just a, hold on.
That's okay.
So you don't maintain a job like that with so many eyes on you and so much exposure unless you're doing it right. So I've made it my business to work with companies to make sure that they're not only relevant today, but putting the right processes in place to make sure that they're relevant tomorrow and that their clients have a safe sanctuary to do business and to put their money that they work so hard for.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have, no, that's an absolutely incredible story. Wow. I was not expecting, you know, so many different turns, but what I like about your story too is at the end of it, there is that recalibration, but a lot of it has to do with the impact, right? Legacy is important, but the biggest part I find with legacy is that initial impact a lot of people overlook, right? And it's continuing the same impact day in and day out, and also staying consistent with your messaging, right? The more consistent you are, and you know your messaging, right? You don't stray away from that quite often. And that allows you to know that when people think of Yosef, they think of exactly what you talk about.
I hope so.
I think so. But I'd love to jump into the second question.
Yeah, please.
It's with your recalibration, I think it's a great segue, and it's how are you making a positive impact in your community?
You know, I found that what worked for me was my biggest challenge was that when I needed guidance, when I needed cover, when I needed to be led down a path, it wasn't just enough to lead me down a proverbial path. I wanted to know what the purpose of that path was, what I could anticipate in the process, what I could anticipate as a result, and what my takeaway or my call to action was going to be. So what I've done is I have made it my business to really double down on education, double down on seminars, double down on teaching, because it's very easy to offer a directive, but it's even, for me, it's more impactful when you understand how that directive is driving value to the people around you, how it's contributing to your team, how it's contributing to your personal growth. You know, because that's equally important, right? Just working and doing, people get burnt out. Where I've kind of flipped the script was you can't get burnt out if you were never on fire. So capitalize on that fire and really, really get into, you know, meaning and drive value by way of what you do and how you do it.
I like that. I like that you said the fire comment. You can't burn out unless you're on fire already. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, right? I have people that come to me and they're like, listen, I'm exhausted. I got people that are working 15, 20 hours a day. I said, I remember my first part-time job.
Yeah.
So, 15 hours a day. I remember that.
Yeah.
It was nice. But the idea was, think about it, right? It's perspective. I'm working 15 hours a day, I'm burnt out. I can't gauge whether or not I'm really adding value. I feel burnt out. Man, you're working 15 hours a day. You can't be burnt out. You're on fire. You're killing it. You're crushing the business. You're doing it. You're hustling. You're taking initiative. You're driving meaning. You're impacting the team. You're impacting the drive, right? You know, the value that we bring, you in your world, me in my world, the value we bring is the problem we solve. So when we think about what that problem is, it's different to everybody. But I have found that the common denominator for most problems is really understanding where you are empowering your employees, enabling your employees, you know, creating empathy and sympathy for your employees, really getting into the crux of who works for you. They can work anywhere, but they've opted to work for you. What does that mean? That means that something about what you're doing and how you're doing it is incentivizing this guy to spend 15 hours a day to commit to what you're doing. Shouldn't they warrant? That warrants being able to understand, you know, that they matter.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's one of those things that I have felt for me and my consultancy. You know, it's the paradigm shift that I made early on in my consultancy that took us from 3.8 million to 226 million in 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, but again, that number is an outcome.
Yes, yeah.
It's a process, and that process, you have to be, you know, everyone says this too, and I feel like I'm just regurgitating a lot because there's so many great people that are sharing such great wisdom. You gotta love the process. And part of that process is recognizing who is facilitating your means to getting there.
Yeah.
Social impact for me is, I give a damn. Hey, that's Mike from accounting. Mike's married to Linda, and Linda has two great kids, and you know, they have two great kids. They're having a communion. Send a cake. Send a card.
Yeah. You know,
just care. And when you can convert your mindset to understanding that employees, they don't work for you. You work for them. The whole relationship changes because it's about service. It's about you're there to give them a means to do a successful job. You will always get highlighted, which is great, but they're there in an effort to facilitate growth on a business. You're there to support that growth.
Yeah.
For me, that's what it's all about. That's the impact, right? So I feel like for me, that's the most important.
Yeah. There was a company that, I don't know if you know of the company Buffer.
I've heard of them.
Sure. Yeah, an online tool, but an incredible company. And I saw a little bit of the backstory of them and you know, incredible team, incredible founders. But one of the coolest things was is that they were rejected by Y Combinator, right? And you know, Y Combinator is what everyone, you know, aspires to be a part of. It's the entrepreneurial dream, but $500 a month in revenue, denied by Y Combinator, right? They were on the brink of failing. But look at them now, right? 2 to 3 years later. But one thing they always talk about through Buffer is the people that were involved, right? It was a family, but it was also that consistency and also working with each other like you're in a relationship because it's you're in business, you're in a marriage.
It's a marriage.
You did it so well and they work so well that look at the outcome, right? And again, what you touched upon, you know, at 220 million, that is incredible. However, it's that process that built you there that built you to the 220 million revenue. It didn't just come, you know, the day after, and it wasn't because you worked just hard. You also worked smart. I think that's a piece that people miss a lot.
You know, it's one of those things where if you don't self-calibrate to understanding that it's not up to you. You don't own this. You facilitate this. They own this. And if you empower, enable, and enhance the experience for the people that work for you, they will always double down on output. And if you don't conceptualize this, you're probably not ready for business.
Yeah.
And that's just honest to God how I feel. That tone of appreciation and value, that's a top-down tone. That cascades top-down. Too many entrepreneurs, too many businesses are thinking, hey, I want to replicate X, and they do this bottom up.
Yeah.
It's top down. Your CEO, your COO, everybody has to believe that everyone else matters. You know, there's a famous line that I had heard from, I want to say, a good friend of mine. He's on my LinkedIn Connect. You should know him. Alan Glazer. Brilliant man. Just brilliant. And it's one of those things where he's such a great mentor, he doesn't even realize he's mentoring you.
Oh yeah.
That's the kind of, like, you talk about impact and social impact, like, holy cow. But one of the things he said was, you know, these, you know, if hindsight is 20/20, what's foresight worth? It's everything. Knowing what the concerns are going to be and planning for them in how you treat people changes the game. You know, that's what it's about. And it's literally reshaped my approach to people. It's, you know, people trust me because I'm candid and I know what I'm talking about. They do business with me because I'm in some cases, I'm just brutally honest. And I will tell people, you know, at the end of the day, this is where you're at and this is why. You want to know why people keep quitting? You know, when things go well, everyone looks in the mirror. When things go horrible, everybody looks out the window. Hey, why don't you take a little bit of self-stock and own the good and the bad. And I think once we start doing that, we level the playing field. And I think that I've seen that on your podcast repeatedly. You have these amazing people that are on this podcast just sharing and exposing themselves and coming off so vulnerable, but they all have that common denominator. They recognize that they are only one variable in a larger equation of value. And for me, sadly, I don't have this crazy formulaic solution. That's the secret. And I, you got it. You guys have, the people that you've had on this podcast, like myself, just like everybody else, we get it. That's the common denominator between people that are successful in business. They understand that in order for the business to do well, your people have to feel valued.
We'll have to feel
that makes sense.
No, it does. It does. It's having me thinking. And the third question can really help expand on this then too, because it's about community. We've gone through, we've gone through the individual, we've gone through who you are as a person, but do you believe, we're going to do business first. Let's do the business question first.
Okay.
Do you believe social impact is an important part of business?
Yeah, I do. Wow. And I'll tell you why. It's one of those things where I think it's again. All right. So before I answer this, let me reconfigure my answer. I think that in my world, social impact means something very different than probably other people, right? So for me, social impact, unfortunately, in some cases, I have clients that feel, hey, I give a couple $1 million a year to charity. I've done my part. I'm good. I don't think that's it. I personally don't think that's it. And I've been honest and candid about it, right? I think being able to be, it's the wisdom that you impart that's more meaningful than the money you give, right? Naveen Jain is probably one of my biggest influences. This guy's success story comes from like bare bones, almost indigence, downtrodden circumstances in India. And today he's all about creating meaning. And equality. And I think that when you think about that, if I'd ask you today, name three of his businesses, couldn't.
No.
But you can tell me that he's a social impactor because he drives value.
Yeah.
That's it. That's why it matters. Because at the end of the day, you can make a lot of money, but you know what? How you're helping other people is just as important as the money you've made by providing a service or a product. So for example, I'm not saying that you need to go out and give all your money away. What I am saying though is that in great opportunities, when opportunities arise to be meaningful and to create a change in someone else's life, those are critical moments. And they happen more often than not, right? That pivot right there defines you. That right there, that moment, that split second, that defines you. That defines who you are, it defines what you do, and it defines why you do it. And at the end of the day, people buy into, and it's not even buy, that's the wrong word, because it's not, you're not selling anything. But when it becomes inherent that that's who you are, people can take confidence in the kind of human being that you are and the type of business that you will always be. And my advice to entrepreneurs like Powerful Entrepreneur, the podcast I was on with those guys and Jake Busani and Suzanne Spainer and these amazing people who I know, like the Beryl Solomons of the world. These are people that they give as much as they get because they understand that the giving is the getting. And when you can calibrate your head to understand that it's not about you, it's about why you do it and how you can take influence and take meaning and impart it on people just by sharing. Nobody's too busy to take a phone call.
Yeah.
Nobody's too busy to respond to an email. It's not beneath anybody to, nobody's there. Like I reported into the Secretary of Defense and he took my call. I assure you that whatever it is you're dealing with is exponentially less significant than anything he was doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You managed to find 2 minutes to take a phone call. But the thing about that is that you have to understand why you want to take the phone call, right? There's a scene from The Breakup. You remember that Jennifer Aniston, Vince Vaughn movie?
Yeah.
So there's a crazy scene where she says to him, she says, you know, I want you to do the dishes. And he's like, I don't want to do the dishes. All right, fine, I'll do the dishes. She's like, no, I don't think you get it. I want you to want to do the dishes. I want you to want to create reciprocal response. I want you to want to share that with me, whatever that is. Mm-hmm. Whether it's cooking with your family, whether it's doing homework with your kids, whether it's giving charity, whether it's speaking pro bono, just to be able to impart confidence. I do a lot of that for universities. I share my best practices every day with students and with professors. Why? Because, you know, it's a situation where you have what to give, you should give it. It doesn't cost you anything. And guess what? Someone was willing to give you a chance. Don't you feel like if you were lucky enough to take the elevator to the top floor, you have a responsibility to send it back down?
Yeah.
That's the change. Be the difference that you want to see in other people. And live your truth, live that difference.
Yeah, that's a big one for me is I've known my entire life that I'm meant for something larger. And, you know, I'm building up towards this capacity of being a leader in the social impact space. And I know I will get there, but every person that I've had along the way, I'm a big believer in mentorship. I have, you know, 5 to 7 mentors at a time, and each of them give me something that I give back in return. But when I get to that place where I'm a leader in that industry, I only want to give back. I've thought about it over and over, and I can imagine, you know, a student or someone coming up to me and saying, you know, I'd love for you to mentor me. My immediate answer is going to be yes. Yeah. Even if I don't have the time, I will set aside the time because that changes people's lives. I'm an avid believer in mentorship, and it baffles me when people don't, right? Even if it's like, a 1 hour a month. Like you said, I'm sorry. 1 hour a month, everyone has. You could be the busiest person in the world. You have an hour. 9 to 10 p.m., 8 to 9, like there's time. Yeah.
I'll give you a great analogy, right? In a talk that I did. You know, this lesson I learned, I'm sure you know her name. If you don't, you should. She's great. You have her on your podcast, by the way. Brilliant woman. Her name is Cher Jones.
So, yeah, I'd love to interview her if you can set that up. Yeah.
She's phenomenal. She's amazing. A great human being. And one of the things I learned from her was, and again, this isn't anything she told me, but it was like my inferred message. And I recently presented this in front of a business meeting. I said, you know, when we take life for granted, we walk around every day doing our business as usual, and we're to some degree maybe devoid of other people.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I thought about was, you know, if you see somebody coming to you who happens to be asking for charity in the street, and they turn around and, you know, they ask you for charity and you give them money, and an hour later you're seeing them drinking out of a bottle of alcohol. Mm. Right away, the default position would be, hey, what a waste. Mm. I gave that guy with the right intent, and he abused that and so forth and so on. And that no longer represents the impact, right? Mm. I ask you to think about it a little more basically. Think about what it took for somebody to put themselves out there like that and need to ask you for that assistance. Mm. When we start putting ourselves outside in and start looking at things objectively, the world becomes an amazing place. And it's astounding, by the way, what happens mentally and psychologically for business, for social purposes, for everything. And this is the Cher Jones connection.
Yeah.
It's amazing what happens when it doesn't matter who's getting the credit. That, my friend, that's to your point, that's the hour a month.
Yeah.
That's the influence. You want to know how to leave a difference behind? It's that. It's that hour a month. It's the 2 minutes that you're willing to take to give somebody closure. Because you never know what the circumstances are that led that person to be in that moment at that moment. Like, you know, it's always easy to turn around and make assumptions.
Yeah.
And we see it the other way too. Hey, you know what? Kylie Jenner's worth $900 million and she has a crowd fund, you know, that wants to take her to a billion. You know, that's great. I want to calibrate my life to that. What you don't know is that that's that process to getting her to where she is today has been happening behind the scenes for years.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's easy to look at everybody else's circumstances and say, I want that. What I tell people, to your point exactly, right? Mentorship is the ability to understand and socialize and convey to people and impart on people that everybody's starting point is not the same.
Yeah.
So when you look at somebody else's middle and you're, and that's still your beginning, you don't know what led up to that. So mentorship is always a great way to impart what you've experienced, what you've learned, because you never know what it's going to ignite in somebody else. So, I mean, you're bang on.
Yeah, I love that message too. And I followed Cher Jones for a while. It's the message is incredible. And I wish it was more commonplace in society where there was that initial intent just to help rather than expect a reward in return. You know, we're a reward society, right? Every action we do is a reward, either long-term or short-term, but there's always that reward. It feels good, fine. Yeah. But it feels so much better when you just help someone and you let go of that need to have a reward, right? Like simple things, I work at the college in my town right now, and it's Barrie, Ontario, it's by Toronto. And there was a student who needed a coat. And I've talked about this a couple times in the podcast, but it resonates with me. And an international student, you know, didn't know Canadian weather. And if you know Canadian weather, it can get...
I spend a lot of time in the GTA.
Yeah, it gets cold, but didn't have a coat and he couldn't afford it. And so I just simply bought him a coat. You know, for me, it was a little bit. It was a lot for me. I was a struggling student, but I could handle it. I could handle the cost.
Right.
And I've stayed connected with that student for years now. For almost 2 years now because of that initial thing. And I didn't expect any reward, right? But what I got in return was a friendship. Just so much more in the end, because I'll remember that when I'm 70 or 80 or even on my deathbed, that, you know, this student, this person I would have never connected with, all I did was help, and now we have a friendship that's deep.
Yeah. When your mentorship is a passive part of your life, that's the sign to me anyway of a phenomenal mentor. Those mentors don't even realize that they're mentoring.
Yeah.
You know, like one of the key things that I remember was, for me, I was very, very, you know, inspired by a gentleman named Richard Clark. And in the US, Richard Clark was the counterterrorism guru under George Bush. And one of the things I remember him saying, you know, very openly was, I have a responsibility to do the right thing. I have a responsibility to perform the best of my ability because someone has entrusted me to do that. And what I really, really appreciated about him was that people came to him and yelled at him in the face. They screamed. They gave him you have no idea. Can you imagine the conversations and the context of those discussions and the type of, you know, data that gets thrown at this guy and the blame and the, who knows what?
Yeah, I could imagine.
And he sat there and he said, I understand your position. I can see where you're frustrated. Let's work on a plan together. You turn down the volume to put yourself at a level playing field with the person you're engaging with. And when you can do that, the conversation becomes a conversation. It's not me talking at you or to you, it's me talking with you. And that, my friend, that's only life teaches that. So the fact that you've gotten to that place right now with, you know, with your age, you're already well ahead of the game. I mean, and it shows by the people you've chosen. How the hell I ended up here, I'm not sure, but it shows by the people that you've chosen to be on this podcast, you know, that like I said, that unilateral messaging throughout everybody is that it's not about them.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, it's about the people we serve. You know, it's a life of service, and not every service has big ROI. I'm not always gonna, you know, it doesn't always include a big paycheck, but being kind, being respectful, behaving with integrity and giving people a sense of closure and a sense of belonging, that, my friend, ROIs at 100% all the time.
Yeah.
So that's I hope that answers kind of where you were going with this.
Yeah, it does. It does. And just the last question then. So we've went through you, we've went through business, we've went through community, but let's do the individual.
Sure.
What is your advice for others to begin making a positive social impact or just positive impact in their communities?
It's a great question. You know, I look at the experiences that were most meaningful to me. And there's a reason I say it that way. You know, what are the experiences that were most meaningful to me? How did I feel embarking on experiences that ended up defining my character, defining, you know, how I feel about a certain program, a certain behavior, a certain attitude, a certain experience? How did I feel when I started that journey? You know, a big part of my philosophy is that every day is day one. And when you can look at and introspect to what your enthusiasm was, that excitement, that newness on day one, the entire paradigm shifts. So, you know, what does it mean to work in a soup kitchen? What does it mean to buy, you know, a foreign student a coat? What does it mean to mentor somebody who couldn't get that guidance anywhere else, but really found their footing by way of your input? What does that mean? If you measure your life based on stuff, you know, what it means to, you know, I measure it based on money. I measure it based on how many cars I have, how many of those types of things. A Honda Accord, that's a basic floor model, will get you to the same destination as a Maserati that is like souped up with all of the amenities. You just have to put priorities where they are. And I feel like for me, when I'm talking to people about impacting, you know, them impacting a social environment, impacting social change, impacting social responsibility, I tell people, you know, when you think about it as every day is day one, you come in every day as a renewed sense of enthusiasm. Like, I laugh because I equated, the best way to equate it would be like Groundhog Day. You get a chance to wake up every day. Like, the point of the movie was Bill Murray, you know, was a news reporter, and he just fell into this like cyclical experience where every day he would wake up and it was Groundhog Day. Every day.
Yeah.
So, and he would go through the exact same motions every day until he finally calibrated himself. Okay, that's going to fall. Hold on. Let me put my hand there. Caught it. Like, you know, that kind of thing. That's the kind of enthusiasm I feel you have to go into. Like, if you ask people that love what they do, how hard do you work? I don't work because they love what they do. So it's never a toil. You know, if you, you know, and I see this a lot, like and people ask me, you know, what do you do first thing in the morning? Well, I drink 130 ounces of coffee a day, so I'm probably not the best person to tell you what I do all day. But my first thing in the morning, believe it or not, I get up before everybody else in my house. I, you know, check my phone, sadly, just like everybody else.
Yeah, I do too, darn.
Brutal. It's terrible. But, you know, I take an hour to myself. I kid you not, it's gonna sound like I'm looking for a plug. And Tom, I love you. This is not a plug, but I watch Impact Theory.
Yeah.
And it literally kicks my head into gear. Like, it's stupid, but that's really what I do. Because I feel like by learning and kickstarting your head, by being involved and visually stimulated and taking something away, you go into every day with a renewed sense of purpose. Organically, you're going to impart that purpose on people that you engage with throughout the course of the day by osmosis. It's just going to happen. There's no way that it wouldn't. It's just the way the technical makeup of a human being works. What intrigues you, what stimulates you, what kicks in your dopamine, you're inclined to share because you're hopeful that on some, I don't know, psychophysical level, they'll in turn reciprocate that dopamine kick. And in most cases, being kind and sharing compassion and warmth and empathy and advice and concern, you get to a place mentally where that is reciprocated, and you know, that's the impact, right? When you feel like giving is taking, you've won.
When you feel like giving is taking, you've won. I like right? that. Huh.
I mean, you know, you're doing it, right?
Yeah.
You're giving a forum, you're giving a parlay for these amazing people to come in and share their story, share their journey, share how they got there, and really kind of get an under the hood kind of look into what makes them who they are today. People, you know, it's very superficial. We only see externals. Mm. You don't understand anybody's plight. You don't understand what they sacrificed in order to get there. So I think that forums like yours and amazing podcasts like this and webcasts and you know, you're giving people a means to be able to share that on a wider level. So I feel like for me, you know, you guys are really the ones facilitating the impact. We're just, you know, we're just cogs, so to speak, in the proverbial wheel that are helping facilitate that. And I, you know, my biggest hope would be that, you know, that some of what I said resonated with you and ultimately, you know, made you feel good about this experience, because that enthusiasm will translate into other people you talk to.
Yeah. It
happens organically.
I mean, I want to first say, you know, thank you so much for being on this thank podcast.
You. Thank you.
You're an incredible speaker. I have to say that. And everything you talked about, a lot of it did resonate with me, but I think the biggest piece was just flipping that script, right? Because not necessarily just business that you work for your employees, but just generally in life, that there is that intent to just help, right? That's if you build that into the basis of your life, your experience changes, right? And a negative experience can then be positive. You know, a positive experience can be more positive because it's just generally the service. And that's what we're built to do as humans. So that was my big takeaway. And, you know, again, just thank you so much for taking this time with me. It was, I'm motivated. Yeah.
Are you ready to go double down on some stocks?
100%. Awesome.
Thanks, Joseph. You've been very, very gracious. Thank you for giving me the opportunity, man. I hope it all works out, and I hope it gets you, you know, the right audience. Hopefully it'll resonate.
Thank you.
You got it, brother. Cheers.
Yeah.
All the best.